Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules. And at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Welcome back to another edition of Banal of America. As I mentioned on the show for these spring episodes, I wanted to talk to people who have been on the show before. There's a difference between when you talk to someone who's been on the show before and when you're having, like, a first-time guest, because you don't really know, their cadence or how long they're going to take to answer a question. It's kind of like a feeling-out process. So it's nice to have someone who's been on the show before, because you kind of know what you're getting into. And they know what they're getting into. They know they're going to have the Banal of America experience. I don't think I reminded you before the show, Mark. You can say whatever you want, swear, you don't have to worry about that. If you don't want to swear, you don't have to either. So don't feel compelled to shoehorn an F-bomb in just to fit in. It's not like that. But when I'm looking over at who I want to talk to here for this spring session, as I said, it was like bring people back. And this is kind of like an impromptu week. I was supposed to be in New Orleans, but the flight got all messed up, so I really didn't have any plans. And I kind of went back to my list and said, who do I really want to talk to again right now? Like, who really? And it dawned on me. I mean, I've been trying to actually talk to tonight's guest, Mark Sargent. I've called into a Flat Earth talk show a couple times in the last year just to talk to him about stuff. And it's like, all right, we'll get Mark back on the show. We'll get back into the Flat Earth stuff. So that's what we're going to do. He's really... There's not too many people who are students of Flat Earth history, so this won't resonate much with them. But he's like the William Rebotham of the Flat Earth theory here in 2021. He's the face of the Flat Earth movement. He's like the Stan Friedman of Flat Earth, pretty much. He's the Lauren Coleman of Flat Earth. He is the pinnacle. He's the guy you want to talk to. And he's been all over the place. He's been on all kinds of stuff. He was in... really the star of the Netflix movie, Behind the Curve. I always get that first word wrong. I'm always like, is it around? Is it under? Yeah, so Behind the Curve. He is the man behind the fantastic YouTube channel Flat Earth Clues, which is really, which surprised me because I had him on the show like a couple years ago, and it's like a clearinghouse for Flat Earth media. So if something pops up on TV somewhere, the Flat Earth, Mark's got it on his YouTube channel right away. Like his interview, he had the interview I had with him on his channel before I had actually got it onto the podcast feed. So it was like, that's true.
That is true.
So he does excellent work there as a clearinghouse of Flat Earth information. That's sort of like the big introduction. I had the great pleasure of meeting him down in Dallas at the Flat Earth Convention a couple years ago. We're going to talk about that tonight. So I could go on and on. I don't agree with Mark about the shape of the Earth, as folks know. I'm not a Flat Earther, but I do respect Mark's take on things. I appreciate that he can have a conversation with someone who isn't a Flat Earther, and we can have a civil normal conversation, and I don't think tonight we're not going to be like trying to convince each other here. I want to know more like what's going on in the Flat Earth community, and we'll probably get into other conspiracy theories and stuff like that. But I really do. I do like you a lot, Mark. I really do. I think that you're a solid dude, and You know, I think you come at it, you know, with your hand, with your palms out. You know what I mean? You're not, this isn't like combative, and I respect that and like that a lot about you. So welcome back to the show, brother.
Thank you for having me. It's been a while.
It has been. But like I said, I always, poor Karen, our friend, I don't know. I don't think Karen likes me, but I like Karen. She's cool. So Karen, I don't know her last name. It's Flat Earth Karen or something. She has a show.
Yeah, Flat Earth Karen. Karen B, otherwise known as Karen Endicott. She is suspicious of a lot of people. More so me. But my saying is trust everyone but count your change. Her, it's like, she's just going to look at you squinty-eyed until you have to prove your innocence. How's that?
All right, that makes sense. Yeah, I definitely got that. I definitely got that impression. But as I said to you when I was setting up tonight's show, it was like, because I didn't know if you remembered me or not, it's like, it's been all. I come in peace. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
So,
no, I do remember walking down the hallway with you a couple times in Dallas. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, it was a good time. We're going to talk about that because a lot of different things happened that weekend and after that weekend and everything else. So we talked, actually, this is like a good segue because we talked right, like, I want to say like a week before the event. So that's about the last time we talked about it. That was when we had you on the show, the week before the Flat Earth Conference down in Dallas. So what have you been up to since then, since coming back from Dallas? I know everyone's had a crazy year and a half or so, but, you know.
The end of 2019 was so amazing. You know, I got to travel and do so many things that were Flat Earth related. They sent me over to the UK, and I got to do Flat Earth conferences in London, and then I did public speaking things in Ireland, opened a conference, the Gather Festival in Stockholm, which wasn't even a Flat Earth conference, but they had me open it with another guy. I was like, okay. All sorts of fun. So, you know, I probably told you, did that television commercial down in Australia. And then I was just about to – there was another commercial out in London. I flew over – God, I kept going back over there. Flew over, did a morning show, the big morning show over in London, and then came back. And they called me as soon as I landed. It's like, hey, can you come back over? We want to shoot you in a McDonald's commercial for Pancake Day because that's a thing over there. Like, okay, you know, because it's round and flat. And
makes sense.
It's like, I get it. Flat Pancake Day. It's like Flat Earth. You're going to make a tie-in. And tickets were ready, passports. You know, they said, oh, yeah, bring a friend. It's like, yeah, great. I was going to bring a friend. And right after that was when the lockdowns happened. And it's like, and then everything just, big iron curtain just dropped on everybody. And in 2020, we only did. Thank God Karen, you know, was getting bored out of her mind. She did a conference down in South Carolina, the only Flat Earth conference we did last year was in South Carolina because we couldn't find any venues that would be willing to waive the legal stuff to go maskless. And so we did the one conference there, and then there was some meetups since, and I don't think I've flown since October of last year. So, yeah. Of that. that's kind of what I've been doing. The channel, I've been putting out, I did a whole series of rants. We can talk about that on my channel about what happened in 2020, which wasn't Flat Earth related, and really had some fun with that. And then got my first community guideline strike in 6 years on YouTube because I said things against, you know, the shot. Let's just call it the shot. And how I said it was going to create a two-tier society, and that was it. After I got the guideline strike, I decided to only post my stuff on BitChute and Brighteon and Rumble, and then let Karen B and Zulu decide, you know, take the show and put it on their channels. But I wasn't going to post on mine until I got off probation. So there you go, long and the short of it.
There you go. You touched on a whole bunch of different things that I've got here in the notes.
Sorry.
So. No, it's fine, We're gonna dig into them, so it's perfectly fine. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna go on a completely different path, just to sort of I kind of have this mentally, like chronologically. Actually, it's in my notes chronologically, but
sure.
One thing that did happen between the convention and and then the pandemic, which was probably would have been like the biggest flat earth story, but a lot of people kind of forget it even happened. But I don't think we talked about this character on the show last time. I'm talking about Mad Mike Hughes. He passed away trying to do the rocket launch. I think that was like in January or February. He was trying to do another rocket launch for a cable TV show. And he died. The rocket crashed.
And thank you for bringing that up, because no one seems to remember this. You're one of the first people, probably 60, 70 interviews, that even bothered to bring it up. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Mad Mike Hughes, who was at the Denver conference, I don't think he was in Dallas, he was trying to – let me back up as far as how he was created. So he was in –
right, that's what I want to know, yeah, because we didn't talk about him before, and now it's like he's his story has reached its conclusion. So, tell me about
it. He was a bargain basement Evel Knievel is what he was. Early 60s, really wanted to – you know, he was all about the girls and the booze and mostly the girls. He wanted to be famous, and he wanted the girls. That's basically what he wanted to do. And he came to us several years back, and he said, hey, this was even before the documentary came out, where he said, can you help me finance my rocket, my steam-powered Evel Knievel-style rocket? I was like, all right. And it's like, what do you want for it? And it's like, well, he goes, I need I need $8,000 to finish the rocket, and what are your conditions? It's like, oh, well, you know, our conditions were we'll just put a big flat earth sticker on the side of the rocket, which was media gold. You know, having a stuntmen come and go, but having a stuntman that has big flat earth sticker on the side, oh, yeah. The media was all over it. He played it and milked it for everything it was worth, and he parlayed it into a couple of really nice opportunities. Well, you know, he did Tosh.0, which was really interesting, but he could not play well with others. And so what ended up happening was he had this weird two things happened. One was he got a deal with the Science Channel, of all things. They thought,
right,
okay, we'll just get a crazy guy and we'll help finance him. We'll finance his next rocket stuff. And they signed him to like they got 6 years worth of rights out of him. We're just like, okay. And then he also had this weird thing where he was trying to trademark people's names. He found some loophole in the California. I only knew this because the San Bernardino Police Department called. I can talk about this now. I mean, I've got the papers. Basically, he was trying to sue me and a whole bunch of other people for the rights to my name. And in case I ever made money on my name. And so I only knew because the San Bernardino Police Department emailed me and they said, hey, we're working on a case. We can't tell you much about it, but we need some of your personal information to follow up on. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, look, I have Nigerian princes that are giving me better lines than that. Go get bent. And they wrote me back later. It's like, no, seriously, we really need your personal information. I go, okay. I'm so glad you wrote me. I go, I admit to everything, the extortion, corporate espionage, white slavery, you know, all sorts of fun stuff. And I go, you will never, ever find all the bodies. Goodbye. And then all of a sudden, Patricia, you remember Patricia Steer? She Skypes me and she goes, hey, I have this weird email from the San Bernardino Police Department. And I go, what? And she goes, yeah. And I go, that's just a scam. Don't worry about it. She writes back. Goes, yeah, you scammers. She goes, go get bent. She goes, you know what? If you're really not a scam, send two police officers right now to my door representing, you know, because she's in Texas. You know, they can vouch for it. I'll be damned if not like 30 minutes later, two cops show up at her door in Houston. And they said, yeah, apparently this happens all the time because there's so many scam emails.
Why didn't you just call the San Bernardino Police Department and go, hey, someone's emailing me. Is this you guys?
Yeah,
didn't want to bother.
Yeah, I didn't want to bother. Anyway, the point was that they were following up. They were trying to work a case on him because he was going after all sorts of people, like the governor of California and different Hollywood people. And anyway, how it all panned out in the end. So we're in the middle of this lawsuit thing, and the police, you know, the different law enforcement agencies are building a case against them. And then the Science Channel, they're shooting the very first episode of this thing that they're going to do. I can't remember what they were calling the redneck rocket scientist or whatever. And the parachute blows off the back of the rocket, and the rocket basically sails off into the air without a parachute. But that was it. That was the end. It crashed. He died. And some people were saying, oh, it was a fake. You know, it was a hoax death. It's like, oh, no. No, no, no. I watched it. We had several people screaming it that morning. Absolutely crashed and burned. And that was it. That was the end of – so if anyone ever wants to – you know, I'll send you the legal documents, which I still have on my machine. And it's hilarious. I felt bad, but then he was never a flat earther. Let's put it this way. Never a true flat earther.
Right, right. That kind of came out after he died, right? That it was like, oh, yeah, this was all marketing stuff.
Well, and plus, he's in it, like Daniel Tosh, during his interview, he's telling him straight to his face. He's going, I don't believe you believe that. And I remember he had done two interviews with this Kansas City radio station, and they called me up after the second one. They said, look, we really like to talk to another flat earther. We've talked to Mad Mike twice. We're just not feeling it, meaning there whatever he was saying the words, but there was nothing behind it. There was no conviction, and they're going, he's not convincing us. And so, yeah, he was in it for once. He knew it was a fame. I felt bad for him because he had to learn all this flat Earth stuff really, really quickly because the media was all over. It's like, oh, tell us about flat Earth. He didn't know anything about flat Earth. He had the sticker on his rocket. He didn't do anything. So he's like grabbing people. It's like, what do I say? And, you know, he was going to the convention. Like, he went to the Denver convention just to bone up on topics. So, yeah. He was not necessarily missed in the community because he really didn't have any friends in the community. He was on his own. And that, I mean, he proved that time and time again to where, again, he signed a TV deal. Nobody else. He recommended nobody else to the TV. It was just going to be him. And he was in it just to be famous. So I was like, all right, have fun with that. Short-lived.
Yeah, well, it's – yeah, that's – well, I'm glad we brought that up, yeah, because like I said, it gets forgotten. Anything seems like in the last – like in this – you know, in the beginning of 2020 before the pandemic, everybody kind of forgot that there was a few good months there.
One more thing, the Netflix, he was actually supposed to be in the Netflix documentary, Behind the Curve.
But oh, really?
He produced – yeah, oh, yeah, he was absolutely supposed to be in it. Why not? Are you kidding? That's a great story.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
The producers played it fairly conservative, and they said the line – I remember where I was with them when they were talking about it. And they said, yeah, but what happens if he crashes? What do we do then? Because right now it's supposed to be sort of a human interest piece, and it's supposed to be light and more upbeat, quirky. But what are we going to do? Take a dark turn, you know? And they were right in this case, because had they shown him later, you know, it would have been, oh yeah, Mad Mike's famous, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, by the way, Mad Mike died. It's like, oh, bummer. And you know, because he wasn't in it, I think it got more traction. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's. There was something about him, I don't mean to, like, besmirch the dead, but there was something kind of, like, he was kind of, I don't want to say, like, unlikable, but, like, brusque. That might be the best way to put it.
Seriously, watch, if you get the chance, I'll send you the link after we're done. Watch the Daniel Tosh interview where he's on with him for 10 minutes. He alienates, I have never seen a guest alienate the entire female audience so quickly. He was basically telling stories about his tactics for how to pick up women in bars, and you go when the bar first opens, take them to hit on a girl, take them to your house, and then there's still time, you can go back to the bar for another girl. It's like stuff like that, or he would like sign his name on the small of their back while they're sleeping with a Sharpie type thing. It's like, the guy is a class act. Absolutely class act. You could tell he was very much like what was that Kurt Russell character? Stuntman Mike, kind of like Stuntman Mike. Yeah, very again. He did not have we were the attention he got, great, benefited the flat earth community, and it was really interesting because he, I would have thought his crash would have caught a lot more attention, but it didn't. His initial launch and fail to launch and the cliffhanger launch where he just like, oh, no, we're not going to do it because of safety, you know, standard stuntman BS. That got way more attention than when he actually crashed. For whatever reason, the networks just didn't cover it. So.
Yeah, well, I think it was kind of like the first time he I covered it, his whole saga, I guess you could say, from start to finish, the rocket part, once he sort of became Flat Earth Mad Mike Hughes. And yeah, it was kind of like...
Right.
At first, it was an interesting story. It was like, this is a wild story. You really want to talk about it. But then it was like, the thing didn't happen. Then, like, you know, you write about it again, and it's kind of like, you rehash the whole thing, and then it didn't happen again. And it was like, what the? Come on, bro. And then at that point, even right. I was like, look, I'm not writing about this guy until he goes up in the fucking rocket. At this point,
right.
I don't, you know, I'm tired of writing the same story, like, oh, he's going to do it this weekend, and then it never happens. And so then he did
right.
it. And that was like, yeah, and then it was kind of like, I think people were sort of, you know, that kind of took the zing out of the story almost. So then it was like, oh, you remember that guy that flew over the rocket? Well, he did it again, and this time he died.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of like, it just didn't
work. Yeah. And by the way, the Science Channel was really quiet about the, I mean, it was very, I mean, because again, they helped pay for that new rocket. And that rocket failed right off the bat, and because he didn't really have any family, you know, normally there'd be some follow-up lawsuit, but there wasn't. It was very, very quiet. It's like, oh, like never happened. It's like, nope, he didn't have any. The whatever they initially assigned, they just made sure, kind of like Matt Lauer at NBC.
There you go. Yeah.
You can go to the NBC offices nowadays. It's like he's been erased from existence. From the NBC studios. That's kind of like with Mad Mike. It's like, no, there was no deal. We don't even, what are you talking about? There's no show. So,
yeah. So after that all happened, then of course the pandemic happened. And what I've been really interested in is watching is I became friends with a lot of the Flat Earth folks through the conference. So it's like, I guess I was surprised, but not surprised in a way that like, I want to say all the flat earthers that I know, so about six or seven people, obviously. I don't know that many, but a lot of the folks I became friendly with in Dallas, they like much like a lot of people who aren't even flat earthers. During the lockdown, they kind of pivoted to like a very the plandemic sort of idea that there was some nefarious underpinnings to all this. And I
sure.
take it, based on what you're saying, you've kind of adopted that mindset as well?
I did, for various reasons. One of the big ones, though, and I don't know how much you want to talk about or how much you can talk about it, which is that I was a big believer in – I'm a big believer in good writing, in solid writing. You know, when you're talking about any story, whether it's a television or movie or whatever it is, the writing has to be solid, and there can't be too many plot holes. If there's too many plot holes, the suspension of disbelief evaporates, and you usually shut it off or move to something else. And the movie, because I've watched a lot of disaster films from various degrees over the years, and one of my favorites was Steven Soderbergh's Contagion from 12 years ago now. And it was a brilliant movie. You remember, you know, with Gwyneth Paltrow and Kate Winslet and I think it was Mark Wahlberg. It was Matt Damon. And the thing was is that every in a real pandemic, an actual pandemic, nothing's open. There is no and okay, let me give you a line real quick, which I throw at people because people say, oh, you know, you're not taking this very seriously. It's like, okay, you want me to take it seriously? To answer me one small question. Why did they ban smoking on airplanes? And it's like, all right, I don't know why. It's like, well, because there is no such thing as a smoking or a non-smoking section on airplanes. The filters, which are basically just furnace filters, they don't stop anything. They especially don't stop smoke, especially secondhand smoke. As you know, if you're a smoker and you live with someone, you know, secondhand smoke, the lawsuits have already been settled years ago. Secondhand smoke will give you cancer and you'll die. So, which is why they banned all smoking on airplanes. It's just one of those things. If you infect pilots, I've talked to a number of pilots over the last year, And they all said the same thing. It's like, look, you know, you make coffee in the back of the plane, we smell it in the cockpit in under 90 seconds. There's a reason for that. I go, the air circulates really, really fast, and the filters don't stop anything. You know, they stop dust. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, big particles of dust. So it's like, okay, what's your point? My point is, well, smoke particles are much, much larger than airborne virus particles. So why didn't the airports ever shut down? Ever? I mean, you know, I flew last year. Multiple trips through multiple airports, and it's like, why didn't the airport shut down? And no one will answer that. The airports, it's because that wasn't part of the plan. You know, there's certain things. This was like a pandemic light, where it was inconvenient and it was irritating, but I'll use a horror movie reference. It just wasn't scary enough. We went through 15 months. I knew exactly one person that died from this thing, supposedly. He was almost 90. He was my uncle. He was recovering from a stroke. He got pneumonia, then went to the hospital. And during that hospital visit for pneumonia at 90, then they said, by the way, you got COVID. And then he passed away. Well, that's not how it worked. You would have a whole bunch of people. Remember in the beginning, they said it had a 1% mortality rate. Well, 1% in the United States, 3.4 million people, all just in the United States alone. That's a huge amount of people.
Yeah, but not everybody got it.
Well, you know, that's
like,
the
I didn't
thing.
Get it.
It doesn't make any sense.
That's
just it, though. How didn't you get it? Because with viruses, again, you watch Contagion. Viruses spread very, very quickly over the people run into other people, which is why, especially airplanes. The great, if you ever remember some of Stephen King's books, the opening chapter of The Stand was once the virus got out of the lab in some Air Force base in the middle of New Mexico, and the guy got on a bus, it was over. That bus, you know, once those people got to an airport or a train and things went really, really quickly, it spread. My point is this, is that if it wasn't scary enough. It wasn't scaring people. It was just irritating. So if you want to scare people, you have to show them – there has to be shock and awe, meaning – It can't be just all people in their freaking 80s that were – or people in assisted living. Show me a freaking volleyball team that was, you know, all in their 30s. We're like, oh, yeah, we're playing without a mask. We're bucking the system. And then three of them go down like sacks of dirt. Show me a jogger that you went by. Thought, oh, yeah, remember Tony? Yeah, didn't he do a triathlon a couple months ago? Yeah, he's dead. It's like, what? He looked great. How did it – what happened? There are no stories like that. Anywhere. Statistically speaking, I'm a big stat nut. Never happened. Never, ever, ever, ever happened. I mean, the news was scrambling to find younger people. And they all, when they did, it's like, oh, yeah, the youngest person was like 14. And it's like, did they have any underlying conditions? Well, yes. Their heart was outside of their body and they didn't have a head. And it's like, there's all sorts of weird, everyone had underlying conditions. So, long story short, it just wasn't scary enough for me. It wasn't. Never. It
for you.
And
it wasn't scary enough for you.
For no, not for me. And not for really anybody in our community, which is most people in the community. People in our community in the conspiracy world, they – not just the flat earth world, but the conspiracy world at large, they're skeptical for various reasons. You know,
obviously.
It's like, well, it wasn't the vaccine wasn't FDA approved. The numbers don't make any sense. There's all sorts of cases. It doesn't hurt young people. Plus, you keep changing stuff. I made a joke. I know you want to make a point here, but I made a joke.
No, it's fine. Go on.
Where, and I shouldn't have joked about it. I said on Strange World, I said, you know, the people basically will believe, the general public will believe anything that's on the news. I go, if the news came out on Friday and said that starting Monday, everyone should wear polka dot masks because polka dots, blue polka dots, actually work better at stopping the particles than other things. Hobby Lobby would be ransacked that weekend for people going for blue polka dot fabric. Or the industries would be popping up all over the place. And my point there is that when they all of a sudden, 9 months later, said, oh, yeah, by the way, two masks is better than one mask, it's like, what are you talking about? But now you're saying that two masks, and, you know, I'm watching all the NASA people and all the government people wearing two masks, like, and there were doctors saying, well, three is better than two. I was going, yeah, with three, you actually would die if you fell asleep, you know, where if you wore three in a row, it would stop everything. And so, no, I have no faith in it whatsoever, but we can talk about the nuances. So, no.
So you think it was like what, an orchestrated scare tactic, if you will, to what, try and.
Not even a scare tactic. It is, in my opinion, the one of the stages of the big Great Reset. They're going for broke on this one. It was something David Weiss and I were talking about last year. We're in the middle of the summer, I think, last year, and he goes, I think we've gone past the point of no return. I don't think this is a drill anymore. It looks like...
And what is this Great Reset?
The Great Reset is that... You can. There's various versions of it online, but the short one is that society needs to be retooled. Our entire civilization needs to be retooled. It's not working. And
I don't necessarily disagree with that idea, to be honest with you.
No, neither do I. that's just it. I'm a big fan of the greater good. And the Georgia Guidestones, by the way, it does creep a lot of people out, where the number one thing the Georgia Guidestones is keep the entire world population under 500 million, which is 90-something percent less than what it is right now. Whereas if you have to retool the civilization, you have to bring about change in a way that possibly, if not a guarantee, possibly doesn't burn down the infrastructure while it's happening. Meaning,
right,
if you freak out people too bad, they're just going to start ripping things to shreds. You know, mm-hmm, pitchforks and blowtorches, and they're just, it'll be the purge multiplied by every day. But how do you do that? How do you retool civilization? How do you change it into how do you create a controlled economy? How do you create a controlled society? And one of the ways of doing this is to create an identification system, a world registry, as it were. And that is one of the things, again, if you're in the Christian community, people in that community have been waiting for it for a long time. But that's what we're talking about, a world registration system disguised as a health crisis, in that you are now creating – I mean, it's not – the masks were, in my opinion, were just about compliance, and the shot was just another level of how far you'd be willing to go. And now they've run into some resistance there, but they've got enough, and as you know, things have been changing recently, very, very recently, over the last 24 hours, where – Now, I did a – well, here's I'll tell you really quick. The guideline strike, which I got, was talking about a two-tier system, which is you have the haves and the have-nots. You take away everybody's toys, and then you say, okay, anyone that gets a shot, you get your toys back.
Yeah.
And anyone that doesn't, they don't get it. And peer pressure is a powerful, powerful thing. I know we've got party lines here in the United States with red team and blue team. Think about it. You have someone invites you to a baseball game, you know, Cubs game, Mets game, football game. It doesn't really matter. And they say, oh, yeah, by the way, you have to require authorization of – you have to have the shot to get into the game.
Yeah.
It's like, well, okay, well, then you have start – I mean, there's lines that have been drawn within families over the last 3-4 months. So,
oh, yeah.
Anyway, the Great Reset, control the economy and control – basically implement a whole nother layer of control, which dwarfs everything we've gotten so far, and you can do it across all borders simultaneously. Because some people are saying, oh, you know, this conspiracy, oh, the whole pandemic is an American thing, blah, blah, blah. I was going, really? Because they shut down India when they only had 50
people. Yeah,
it's
been going on like all over.
India's got 1.3 billion people. How do you do that? Unless you're talking about a much, much bigger plan, which is why next week's episode, by the way, on my channel is called The Eye of the Storm, because one of the listeners gave it to me. She owned a restaurant, and she said, oh, yeah, people are coming in. It's great. And she knows full well. She goes, on the other side of this, if you know it, you know the whole hurricane reference, on the other side of the eye, that's when the fun starts. which is what I believe will happen is that it's very, very soon, because now they're saying, oh, yeah, you can just go in, but you have to prove that you have the shot. Well, how do you prove that? Right now we only have paper cards. There's no way to prove it. It's basically it's an honor code thing. You know how that's going to go. People are going to be like, oh, yeah, I got it. I mean, come on. I have lied. I never have gotten my tetanus shot, and I have lied about that pretty much forever. No one wants
Jesus,
to catch
dude,
it.
Don't freaking step on any nails this summer.
Well, you know what I mean. No one wants to get the needle. And,
just
but,
give
and doctors
just give
are over.
Shit.
Oh no, no, no! I know. But the point is people lie. There was a great Scrubs episode where they were showing this little montage. It's like people lie to doctors all the time. You don't think people are gonna lie about their shot to get into something? Of course they will. And that will cause this massive uproar from the people that did get the shot, and they are going to demand that the registration system be digitized and the 3D barcode system. That what we've been already working on the passport system. So anyway,
so what's interesting to me? No, it's fine. So that's what I wanted to know about. So what's interesting to me, in a sense, I guess, to sort of bring it a little bit back to the flat Earth thing in a way, it's just that. What fascinated me as I was sort of watching this unfold in the folks that I knew from that I know from Flat Earth World, yeah. I consider them my friends. I don't, have, you know, we disagree on a lot of things. You and I disagree about the pandemic, so that's fine.
Sure.
What's interesting to me though is like they became more plandemic conspiracy theorists. Is it sort of just like it was just kind of I don't know, funny and amusing and interesting to me where it's like. They're just kind of like, all right, this pandemic thing is happening. The Earth is flat. They've just accepted that. That's just canon in their worldview. And on the flat right. Earth is this pandemic unfolding. It's sort of like, well, you know, it's like we can't worry about dealing with the flat Earth anymore. We have to we have to deal with the here and now, which is this pandemic. And then, it feels almost like the flat Earth took a way back seat to this pandemic stuff. Understandably, that happened in a lot of fields.
Come on, the virus thing took over all every form of media there was. And so in our case, no, we're still, I mean, I'm still making videos and people are still doing stuff. But the first thing it did was it completely dampened all the meetups. Very few, 90% of our meetups didn't happen. And the conferences, almost none of the conferences. I mean, I did conferences in 7 countries in 2019. And I did just America, just one of them last year. But you could go down the line. I mean, how many movies didn't get made? I mean, they're delaying so many things because of it. But the other thing was with the community, it's one of the default side effects of being in Flat Earth is once you're into Flat Earth, you are skeptical of everything. And I don't want to use the term auto-hoaxing, if you've ever heard of that, which is it's fairly new, which is if something comes out on the mainstream media, it's considered guilty until proven innocent, meaning it's a hoax until otherwise, because you assume that every story that is on mainstream media is got some ulterior motive. It's pushing some sort of angle. Now I would come back and say, well, not all of them, but quite a few. Sure. Is there anything? Is there any objective journalism? Has there ever been objective journalism? Probably not for some time. Corporations and parent corporations get involved, and so on and so on. But yeah, with the virus thing, it was we jumped on that thing immediately because it's like, and for me, I laid out the things for you. It raised my eyebrow too many times to where now I'm like, I'm just waiting until I'm seeing what comes next. Everything up until now has just been the pre-theater. Now we're going to see what's what. And anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it's interesting. It's funny because the nature of my job, you know, I'm always searching for every day. It's sort of running the algorithms, looking for stories from different topics and communities and stuff like that. So it's, you know, I run them through the Google News and everything, and one of them's like Flat Earth, anytime the you know, they talk about the anti-vax community or the pandemic conspiracy folks, it always kind of gets dropped in as like an insult in a way, where the person's like, these people are like flat earthers, and like I'm always like reading them, and I'm like, no, they are flat earthers. Like,
flat earthers are
a part of.
I find that funny. There's crazy, there's insane, and then there's flat earth. Yeah, it's kind of the catch-all for the top-level insanity. If you've lost your mind, you're obviously, and so people will use, and since it's been the buzzword, you know, for quite a while now, people have been using it more and more. I was thinking about this today, even the title of the movie, for example, Behind the Curve, which was done, by the documentary team down in Los Angeles, they were not flat earthers in any way. And by the time they were done, they hated us. They hated us. They still, to this day, the director, so weird. I mean, he listened to me, and he could not believe that I believed it. He's like, no, Mark doesn't believe it. He doesn't. It's like, what are you talking about? I've made like 1,400 videos. I've been doing this for 6 years. I have never wavered in any way, shape, or form. He couldn't get his head around it. He just couldn't do it because it was an affront. He was one of those heavy science people that it was just insulting, to the point where he had a chance. I mean, it tracked on Netflix for months and months. It was like always the number one thing. Not just in the documentary section. They just kept recommending it. People kept watching it, and he had a chance. It's like he could have done a sequel, easily done a sequel. All he had to do was pick different people. But he had burned so many bridges, and he hated us so much. I absolutely would have done it. But we never spoke after that. In fact, I remember that after we did the first film festival in Toronto where it premiered, I think that was basically it. But it was strange. Like, one of the film festivals out in Arkansas, they didn't even have enough people to go out. I mean, they got into every film festival they wanted to, and they sent me out there. But they had somebody live streaming me on stage answering questions just in case, because they didn't trust me. Like, I was like, what am I going to do? A submarine, you guys?
What they think you were going to do.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Now, to be fair, though, they were not completely honest with us in that I did not know. I had heard that there was a director's commentary somewhere, and it was actually on the iTunes version. And so Patricia and I were listening to it, and we're listening. It's boring, you know, your standard crap where you have the producer and the lead editor and the director, and they're just talking about. It's not even a good commentary until they got to the point where the 12-year-old, I'm talking on stage, and there's a 12-year-old kid who's asking me questions from the audience. And they all chimed in at the same time, and they said, yeah, this is when we had to take a stand. And it's like, what? And it's like against Flat Earth. Because at that point we were supposedly it's all fun and games, so the kids are involved. We were messing with the future. We were messing with, we were exposing children to alternative ideas. But the movie was already shot. The movie was more or less in the can, and they couldn't reshoot it, so they had to tweak it in editing as much as they could. And that ended up working in our favor because the audiences were more likely to watch it. Even the title, Behind the Curve, which is more kind of an insult, you throw at people, it's like, oh yeah, he's behind the curve, the bell curve, but it was a nice play on words, and because of that, people felt safe going into it. I sat in a number of studio audiences where people didn't even think it was real. They did not think that the movie was. They thought it was a piece of docufiction. And I don't know if I told you this, but there was a great line. One of the editors out in Los Angeles who watched it, they showed it to him. They go, they didn't give me any context at all. They said, just watch this. I'm not going to tell you anything. And afterwards, he's going, wow. He goes, what sort of budget did you guys have for this movie? I go, what are you talking about? He goes, all those actors, they played it so straight. And they go, no, man, that was all real. And his eyes go, burr. And he goes, wait, that conference down in Raleigh, that happened? And he goes, we were there for 3 days. And he couldn't believe it. And I saw this time and time again. The first 30 minutes, if somebody sat down and had no idea what Flat Earth was, they were like chuckling and laughing a little bit. And then that's the 30-minute mark, they're going, wait a minute. there's something really weird and different on the internet. I knew nothing about it, and I'm a little worried right now. And you could hear people whispering to each other, like nudging. It's like, I think this is real. It was great. Anyway,
yeah, well, I can totally see what you're saying. I can see why they there's something about you, Mark, that does make it hard to believe that you believe this, and I can't quite put my finger on it. It's like you're not really – I think part of it may be that you're sort of like upbeat and friendly and not necessarily sort of like combative about it. Because most of the people who are, like, super into a lot of this stuff, we talk about this on the show a lot. The UFO people are really, strident lately. But a lot of folks who believe in these things can get pretty aggressive. And you're, like, the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, well, this guy can't really believe it because he's not really trying to twist my arm into becoming a flat earther.
Yeah. You're absolutely right.
You see where I'm coming from?
The conspiracy world at large is dark. They talk in hushed tones. They talk like Christian Bale and Batman, like I'm gurgling marbles. And it's like the government. It's all the government's the man, and they're constantly looking over their shoulder to where. And for me, no, it's completely different. I absolutely believe it, but I don't treat it like it's the end all. Like the big thing for me is out of all the conspiracies in the world, this is the only one that we had nothing to do with. Meaning, they're also, UFOs, JFK, 9/11, and blah blah blah. These are all conspiracies that are created by men. Whereas the flat Earth had nothing to do with us, only that we were inside it. All we did was keep the secret for as long as possible. And if that's the case, well, then what sinister side is there? It's like it's just civilization. And I would be the first one to jump on that and say, if we didn't discover this thing until 1960, would I tell the general population? No, I wouldn't tell the general population. We weren't ready to tell anybody. I mean, you saw what happened with Roswell a decade earlier, where the whole Roswell story. Well, that was just radio and newspaper. People are freaking out. And, you come back 13 years later and say, yeah, by the way, you're living in a snow globe. People would lose their minds. So, and I would, I'm one of those rare conspiracy people that believe in the greater good. Meaning, does the conspiracy, it's my qualifier for any conspiracy, does the conspiracy itself satisfy some sort of greater good? And if you look at the plan objectively, don't look at it like, white hats, black hats. Look at it objectively. It's like, okay, what are they trying to do? And could you have resolved the issue any differently with a better outcome? If I couldn't have improved on their plan, then I'd be like, well, that's just how it works. People in power make decisions that we don't have a position on for various reasons. And this was one of them. Would I have told everyone in 1960 that we lived in the snow globe? Nope. I wouldn't have. I would have waited until way further down the line. Eventually, it'd be like, we'll tell them eventually, but the infrastructure has got to be different.
So just to be clear, it's your contention that they didn't truly know the Earth is flat until 1960, presumably when they started trying to launch into space, is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. You couldn't know. Think about it. We'll go all the way back to, like, say you're the king of France, 1500. You have wooden ships and you have horses. Even if you had a flat Earth map, so what? What are you going to do with it? You don't have the tech to even remotely validate this thing. So, and I'm sure there were some ancient maps out there, but it didn't make any sense to them. Maybe they found a model, a cool little domed model, and they're looking at it going, oh, what the hell? But until the internal combustion engine comes along, early 1900s, and until you have the early rocketry programs, 30s, 40s, and into the 50s, you don't really know anything. Again, until you get up high enough to look back down on the Earth or your rocket crashes, what do you really know? And people wouldn't say, I know nerds have come back and say, oh, no, geometry proved it. It's going, no, geometry didn't do anything. People talk about, the Greeks proved it using geometry back in such and such BC. I'm going, yeah, that's when we didn't even know where the continents were. So don't start up about that. But anyway, so no, they did not know until about 1960. And when they did, and that was when they explored, they had already explored the North Pole, and they had been looking, you know some of this story, you know, Admiral Richard Byrd basically flying around Antarctica for 30 years because he was and probably the greatest explorer of all time. And then he finds something during Operation Deep Freeze in 55, 56, and then they create the Antarctic Treaty. The only unbroken treaty in the history of everything, and it's still not up for review until 2041. You cannot, as a corporation, go down there and set up shop ever. It's against the rules. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
It's like the place is made out of money. It's just one of those things. So, no, we didn't know until 1960, and then when we figured it out,
gotcha.
We didn't tell anybody, and I agree with them.
Okay, so you're not in favor of flat Earth disclosure then, if you will.
Well, now we're close. I think about this. If you were looking to – it's all about the narrative. You have to spin the story in a way that the public – you have to control the narrative if you're the powers that be. And look what we have now. We have high-speed internet. We have social media. We have 6 billion smartphones. More people have smartphones than they do running water. You could push a narrative – And we've proven that just in the last year. You can push a narrative to everybody simultaneously and get everybody on the same page. And so now you could release. You could release anything you want. You could release an alien agenda. You could release a new bureau agenda. You could at this stage, you could tell people anything, and they're going to buy it because their phones said so. And it was just a scary proposition in some ways, but it's just as a goal, if you, you know, if you're looking from the greater good side, if you're looking to control a population, so would I think it'd be a good thing to release it now? Sure. Why not? What do you got to lose at this stage? What's the worst that could happen now?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're in sort of a weird post-apocalyptic type setting as it is. So, yeah, the whole world feels very dystopian at the moment.
Oh, my God. Again, which is why I made the last rant video I made, which was called The Coming Gattaca. If you remember the late 90s movie with Jude Law and Uma Thurman and Ethan Hawke, where it really was about eugenics. And they basically – they figured out a way to get rid of all birth defects while the child was in the womb. And parents slowly but surely became a very slippery slope to where the parents that had their children genetically perfected, they got better opportunities. Those kids grew up
right.
And they got better jobs and they got better things. And the ones that didn't, the natural parents and those things, they were blue collar for the rest of their lives. And that's where we're real close to that right now, where all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, you get the shot, you can get to do all the fun things you want. You don't get the shot, you don't get to do anything. You're lucky you have a job. And, so, yeah, talk about dystopia. It is a weird, weird place we're in right now. I mean, who would have thought, by the way, that the easiest way to quell a population is just pay them. And I don't want to pick too much on the Native Americans because it turns out we fell for it too. But, you know, in the end, how we solved the Native American problem, which was we just paid them every month quite a bit of money, actually, to where they didn't like their car, they'd go out and buy a new one. We paid them every month quite a bit of money. And it killed their motivation. It absolutely killed everything they wanted to do. It's like, why? I can just sit home. I get a check every month. I watch TV. Here, give me a new flat screen. And
well,
now,
I don't know anything about that, so I don't know.
Oh, no,
I will say, well, no, as far as like a universal basic income, I don't see any. Look, dude, I think part of the issue here is you kind of touched on it in that Gattaca thing, but it's like I think a lot of times people just don't quite get that the real fucking conspiracy here is that the rich people have all the fucking money and that all the rest of us don't have any of it. That's there's not really any too much grander, and they fool everybody into all the people who were underneath the rich people into fighting with each other over over their race, their religion, their sexual orientation.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they divide us up all into these little groups, and it's like, there's only two fucking groups, rich people and poor people. That's it. And the poor people are way more than the rich people.
Absolutely. And have you ever seen a year like last year where I mean, I joked, it's like, oh, yeah, by the way, riot season's coming up, where I've never seen a nation so pulled in so many different directions simultaneously to where everybody's offended about everything else. And it's and again, it's all media driven and it's overhyped. To, I mean, it used to be, oh, just red team, blue team. But have you ever seen it to where I did a video called For All the Marbles? And I said, look, red team and blue team want to kill each other. They want to wipe each other off the map, to where the Biden's little gaffe when he was talking just the other month where they asked him about, you know, him running for reelection in 2024. And he goes, what, are you kidding? He goes, I don't know if there's even going to be a Republican Party in 2024. And I was stunned that nobody, no mainstream even wanted to talk about that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We are so polarized, and we've got it. Everyone's fighting amongst themselves. And it is the first rule of power, which has never, ever changed, is the curse of being the puppet master. The first rule of power is stay hidden, which is you cannot be the puppet master and be in the limelight, be the puppet at the same time. Or the line from Napoleon? Never put yourself. The first rule of power is never put yourself in a position where you can be overthrown. I mean, there's people above. They talk about, well, Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world, and Bill Gates. It's like, no, they're the richest. I correct people all the time. I said they're the richest public people in the world. There are people that they're new. Not only are they new money, they're extremely new money. They smell like new money. The ink's still drying on their money. There are people, you look at the families that have been around for, I don't know, 5-6 centuries, which you don't see them on television. You don't see them talking about this and that. And in fact, even, I know some people would say, oh, it's the Rothschilds. It's like, even the Rothschilds only go back a couple hundred years. There's probably families that are much, much older. Go look at the Vatican. Go look at the remnants of the Roman Empire. You know, look at some of the, you want to look at the Illuminati or whoever. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm rambling.
It's all right. It's all right. Yeah. So interesting. Let me see where I want to go here with this. We'll sort of pivot to, so we'll sort of like turn the page a little bit and sort of have a fresh
sure.
thought here. Have you looked at this? Have you looked at this QAnon? Because it seems like this sort of a tangential, you know, I forget the name of that thing where the two circles overlap, but the Venn diagram. There's a sort of a sliver of the Venn diagram with the QAnon and the flat Earth, and it does seem like. Now, look, I don't expect you to say, "Oh, flat Earth isn't as popular as it used to be," but just based on my observation, it doesn't seem like the flat Earth is as popular as it was, say, like 2 years ago. Like, I feel like maybe it crested a couple years ago. That's just my opinion. And I think a lot of people, because of this polarization we're experiencing, because of the pandemic, they may still be flat earthers, but they've gotten pulled into these other groups like QAnon. I think QAnon people were pandemic folks themselves. But have you looked at sort of the relationship with this QAnon thing at all, with flat Earth?
Yeah, I have. A couple of people have asked me about QAnon. I'm old enough, of course, to remember the original Anon back in the day. The people, the actual hackers, which did quite a bit of damage out there, and they were caught because, well, if you're on the internet, they will find you. People forget that the entire internet, the web, is a military backbone system. It was created by the military. They can find you if they have to. It's like, oh, I'm a hacker. I can bounce things off of satellites. It's like, no. No, you're on borrowed time. The only reason they haven't grabbed you is because you're not worth it. When it came to QAnon, the reason why I was there's a couple of reasons why I was suspicious about QAnon is, one, they didn't really predict much of anything, and two, they were very vague. They kept putting that carrot or kicking the can down the road, or let's call it the carrot. It was like, oh, yeah, on such and such date, this is going to happen. And then it's like, okay, that date's now moved.
Right.
And it turned – QAnon didn't – the original Anon was about all sorts of stuff. But QAnon was really tied to the whole red team Trump thing. And it was to where you had a whole bunch of people at Trump rallies that were wearing the QAnon shirts. That's a bad sign right out of the gate. Because, and the fact that if mainstream's covering it also is like mainstream doesn't do anything by accident. They're covering it because they're trying to raise a, you know, they're tying it to conspiracies and they're trying to demonize Red Team. And they're, you know, the QAnon was an interesting bridge into the conspiracy world, but no, I told people, I go, here's where QAnon, and it did mostly. I go, here's QAnon's mostly going to die after the inauguration. I go, because right. after the inauguration, people kept saying, oh, no, there's going to be a big revolt on Inauguration Day. And it never happened. And if I still have diehard Red Team members, family, that send me emails every once in a while. There is still chatter in the Red Team community that swears that, oh, no, any day now, it's going to. Yeah, I know. No, still this day. It's freaking May. And they're still saying this. And I treat it no differently than I do the NASA people that I would talk to, or the NASA fans. There was this one girl in Ireland. Oh, she was great. I go, look. I go, no one's been to the moon since 1972. I go, every president over here since Reagan has said that they're committed to going back to the moon. And I asked her, and I knew exactly what she was going to say when I asked her. I go, so when you going back? And she goes, soon. We're going back soon. I go, huh?
Yeah. All right. I see what you're saying.
I've heard that too many times. And yes, I'm tying that to QAnon because it's like, oh, yeah. It kind of reminded me of the whole South, we shall overcome. You know, the South will rise again. And that was paralleling with the Trump thing too much to where QAnon was an interesting story for a while, but it had an expiration date on it. And I have gotten the QAnon emails that used to circulate and show up on my freaking desk, all but evaporated after Biden was sworn in. So there you go.
Right. Okay. So do you think with the QAnon, that's kind of dying out? I agree. It's, you know, I feel like maybe the remnants of that will morph into something else, like how Pizzagate gave us QAnon, that'll give us something else.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
The
Pizzagate thing, by the way, was interesting because I had a different take on it. He was like, look, because everybody was treating it like it was this unique thing. I'm going, look. And I'm not trying to be dark here on the show. I'm going, look, child prostitution has been a thing for forever, for centuries, millennia. Child prostitution, it's a real thing. It should be completely illegal, and it should, you know, it should be banned from everywhere. But as you know, the for a lot of people, we want most, which we cannot have, and there's a lot of horrible people out there that will pay top dollar for that. Are some of them celebrities? Possibly. Are some of them politicians? Possibly. You know, it's not exclusive. The thing that bugged me about that was it's not exclusive to them. Meaning, you know, the Hostel was not just a movie to me or a movie series to me. And by the way, that's where it would be most appropriate. It's like it wouldn't be in the basement of a freaking pizza shop. It would be in a Soviet bloc country, you know,
where you'd
have multiple layers of security. Nobody's getting in there. And you have to buy your way in, and yeah, I know the emails and all that stuff. And yes, but did some people possibly get caught with their hands in the cookie jar? Sure, but it never happened. Sorry, one last thing about the QAnon thing. I kept hearing about, oh, the arrests are going to be made, you know, all these people. Did anyone get hit for Pizzagate? Anybody? So,
Yeah. Believe me, I'm not a Q guy anyway, so I don't think about it. Do you know anything about this Dylan Wheeler guy who was a Q guy, and then he switched to Flat Earth? Do you know anything about this character?
What's his name?
Dylan Wheeler. Somebody wrote in and asked.
Does he have a channel name?
A handle?
Most people use it.
Let me see if he has a handle.
He has a handle, maybe.
My friend, Dr. Edward Guimont, he's a big fan of the Flat Earth as well, so he sent me some questions. He said, more commonly known by his handle, Education for Libs.
No, I don't know him.
So
why is he?
All right. Yeah, I guess it says he was an early promoter of QAnon and one of the biggest names in QAnon. In August 2020, Wheeler left QAnon, saying that his Christian faith would not allow him to follow Q, who he viewed as a false messiah. In February of this year, Wheeler announced that he was now a flat earther, which seems to be the first big name shift from QAnon to flat earth. So,
Anyone that comes in, as long as they're well behaved, look, we've really been lucky in that regard. In fact, I predicted way back in 2015. I go, you know, the whole flat earth concept is polarizing enough to where there could be a small percentage of people that freak out and go do horrible things, you know, lose their mind, you know, do the whole Neo and the Matrix thing where they just start swinging. And
yeah,
it never happened. We were worried. I think it was in 2017 or the end of 2016, where there was a guy in Canada that painted flat earth slogans all over this boat and parked it in the middle of the shopping center. And I remember the helicopter footage from this, and Jaron and I and David Weiss were watching this, and we're going, that boat's going to catch fire, isn't it? That boat's going to blow up, isn't it? It's booby-trapped, isn't it? And it never, ever happened. And it was like, nope, it was just a guy with his boat. The flat earth community has been really, again, because it's upbeat. When you go to a flat earth, I mean, you're at the conference, it's generally a very good mood type of place. And so we don't provoke people. We don't get into fights if we can help it. Oh, by the way, let me comment on something you said earlier, because I don't sound like a normal conspiracy person. There was a guy in New Zealand who wrote about – he'd met me, and he wrote for the local paper down there. And he said – and it's the first time I've ever heard this. And he goes, Mark has a goofy warmth that instantly disarms you.
Yeah,
and I never thought of that. And so I walked around. I go, goofy warmth? Goofy warmth? Is that really it? And they go, oh, yeah, that's it. It's like, oh, I'll take it. I mean, it's not molten sexual charisma, but, you know, you got to work with what you got.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. Hey. Yeah, exactly. You got to work with what you got. Now, what do you yeah. – now, this is interesting because, as I said, I cover the flat earth all the time. So what I find – I mean, look, all these different fields have their wacky characters, but it seems like flat earth has sort of a – I don't know if it's just the nature of the flat earth or if it's just no. or if it's just the people that it attracts, but it's like – and I'll give you some examples now, because I noticed this over last year, because people I met who in one case – where's the guy here? This Nathan guy seemed like a decent character, Nathan Thompson.
Yeah.
Then he gets in trouble for, like, throwing flat earth flyers over the fence of an elementary school. It's like, Nathan, why are you doing that, dude? What could possibly possess you to think that's a good idea? You know, and then there's a couple of Italian folks who went on a road trip and broke the quarantine because they were going to take their boat to the edge of the flat earth. I don't know if you heard about that story. Last year, but there's a certain like wackiness. There's a certain, There's a certain sort of like, just kind of absurdity to it that I can't quite put my finger on. Do you know what I'm talking about at all? Is that feeling?
Yeah. 90% of the community, at least 90, maybe 95% of the community are pretty ordinary people.
That's true.
Sit down with any flyers. They look just like you and me. You know, they're pretty normal looking. They act pretty normal. In fact, 90% of our community is in the closet, which is even weirder. But anyone listening to this, you know flat earthers right now. They walk amongst you. But they're not going to come out because they're afraid of getting hell from friends and family and coworkers. Kyrie Irving, a perfect example of that, where he comes out. He was high on life. He had won his championship, going to the All-Star game. LeBron James, my best friend. And he goes on a podcast like, yeah, I'm a flat earther. What are you going to do to me? And he had forgotten. It's like, yeah, it's not time stands still. You still got to go to the locker room night after night, and the media is going to come after you. And they did. And I have talked to wonderful people in the celebrity world who cannot come out, won't come out. They're like, yeah, there's no way, because we'll catch too much hell. As far as the zaniest, though, I mean, Nathan, right out of the gate. So we're at the Raleigh conference where they shot the documentary, and the speakers were all there, and everyone was chosen to do things. But one guy, he was the only guy that actually crashed the conference. And in fact, we made sure, we told everyone, like, don't wear weird costumes, don't wear weird stuff. And Nathan walks in wearing a globe on his head with sunglasses. And the media could not help themselves. You know,
that's like when I was down in Dallas, dude. The fuck, he was a lovely guy. I loved talking to him. Yeah. And I know you're going to know who I mean. Top Hat Guy.
Yeah.
You remember Top Hat Guy from Dallas?
I know Top Hat Guy, yeah.
He's a wonderful guy. But it was like, well, I'm looking around, and I'm like, I kind of like looking over the bar, I remember that first night, and I'm like, that's what I expected here at this Flat Earth Convention, Top Hat Guy. So I can see,
yeah,
I can see kind of what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, and which is why, two stories real quick, which is why when Jimmy Kimmel sent his team down to the Dallas conference to punk us, we did not realize that. So he sends a normal camera team with an interviewer, and then he has one of his guys disguised as a flat earther pay full freight and come in and buy a ticket and ask sort of weird questions. He was, you know, he asked he won a door prize at my session because he asked the first question. And people are saying, well, why didn't you do, you know, didn't you know why you dressed up, you kind of like Top Hat Guy, you know, head to toe with memorabilia, and I was like, look, man, I go, as far as flat earthers go, he wasn't even the weirdest flat earth outfit I'd even seen that day. Why would I treat him any differently? But anyway, and so in that case, by the way, the late night show, Jimmy Kimmel's show, had to fabricate a weird flat earther. You know, he was over the top, which is how he got found out in the end. If he just played it more low key, he could have stayed there for hours. But he had been drinking. He was an ass. He wrote me later, and I said, "Dude, I go, all you had to do is turn it down a couple notches, and you could have stayed there. All you could have been drinking with people. You could have turned this into a big segment." And he didn't. When it came to Nathan, though, I remember there was a you remember the television show The Amazing Race?
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell? Okay.
Yeah, of course.
So they contacted me and was saying, okay, we're thinking of doing a YouTube-only version of The Amazing Race, and we'd like Flat Earth to be a part of it. I'm like, okay, sure. Why not? This was just before the Dallas conference. And they were saying, you know, we'd like people from the documentary, and we'd like a man and a woman. I go, well, there's only one woman in the documentary, and she's not running anywhere, and that's Patricia. And I go, But then I figured out, you know, they said, watch, you know, season 31, or, you know, and I'm watching The Amazing Race, and I'm realizing that there's no race at all. It's a really fabricated reality show like everything else.
Yeah, you got to do tasks and, like, goofy shit. And yeah.
Oh, yeah, but not only that, they know exactly who's going to win, who's going to place gold, silver, and bronze, you know, before the season even starts, which is what you would do as a producer. You want to get the maximum output. And anyway, they were talking about who should be on the show and who shouldn't, and I said, look, well, if you don't care about two guys being on the show, the guy you really want on the show is Nathan Thompson. I go, that kid is built for game shows. I mean, he's a ball of energy. His mind is going a million miles an hour.
He's intense.
He's intense. He's all sorts of weird types of enthusiasm. He doesn't edit his thoughts, really. That's the guy. And then I kind of axed myself out of it because I told him, I said, what you really should do, let's call it what it is. I go, if you want to this season to be a good season, I go, make us the villain. I go, don't make us come in first. Don't make us come in third. As long as you come in third, you make it through the entire season. You know, if you get knocked out in the first 2 weeks, they never see you again until the very end. Don't give us any money. I go, make us the villain. Everyone hates Flat Earth. It would be brilliant. And I wasn't trying to insult him when I said, look, you're about as real as world wrestling. But it was true. I mean, I watched the seasons, and I followed. It's like, okay, why is this? You know, there's too many plot holes. But it doesn't really matter. Anyone's watching The Amazing Race, it has nothing to do with physical prowess or running anywhere. They run and then they stop and they give you a break. Then they roll cameras. Anyway, the point is that just before Nathan and Matt Long were supposed to go to Los Angeles right after the Dallas conference to audition for the you know, do screen tests for The Amazing Race, and the whole thing fell apart. Why? A little inside scoop for you, is that when you shoot these shows, especially like this one, it's a complete media blackout. So they tell you that it's like, look, we shoot the whole thing in a month, but
right.
you have to sign a waiver, and you cannot be on the internet at any point. There is no phone,
okay, yeah.
no texting, nothing. You can watch television. That's it. And they were going to big YouTube channels, and basically what they were saying is they're going to like channels of millions of subscribers, and they said, can you be off the internet for a month? And they were coming back and said, well, sure. How much are you going to pay us? Because they, you know, some of these people, they live off. It's like, you're telling me I can't make a video for an entire month. That's a death sentence, potentially. And I can't even tell anybody why I can't make a video for a month.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, so the whole thing, Flat Earth would have totally been in it. We would have absolutely been there, and Nathan would have been our spokesperson in the game show world, but never happened.
Oh boy,
unfortunately.
Yeah, well, he's a character. I don't know what.
Yes,
I hope he didn't get in any
yes.
too much legal trouble with that stunt at the
no,
school.
No,
but...
no, Nope. He's traveling
right.
around. He's one of the only guys that's been doing meetups this year. He's traveled from the East Coast, and I think he's in San Diego right now. I don't know what's going after that, but yeah, he does meetups.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?